Hello there. I'm Matt Veloso, and today I have the pleasure to be here with some super smart folks. So I have Bo, he's the group program manager on the tooling side of Azure, so all the tools for developers, we'll be talking a lot about it. Lance will be talking about big data, so he's a principal group PM manager on the big data space, Hadoop, HD Insights, we'll talk a lot about that as well. And we'll be talking with Brady about web jobs. So if you never heard about what Azure web jobs are, we'll get there. So we have about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. We want to answer questions. So if you have questions, send over. Within time, we try to answer all of them. I will stop talking. So I want Bo to start with the tooling side. So how do we get started with the whole Azure development SDK?
Yeah, that's good. So I thought we could just get started, take a quick lap around, see what's new, and then I'll go a little bit deeper into diagnostics and some
other things.
Sounds great. All right. Sounds good. So right here I have Visual Studio 2015. It's the preview. Some new things that we're seeing. Now that I'm signed in the top right-hand corner, that's automatically linked into my Azure account. So just by signing into Visual Studio itself, if you've got an Azure account behind it, you sign in. If you have additional accounts, let's say you mix your personal account with work accounts, you can just add additional ones. So that's no longer a barrier. You can use as many accounts as you need to. So that's pretty cool. And then there's a number of other places you can connect. Let's say in Server Explorer, you could say manage your subscriptions. Here you're going to see the multiple accounts. You're going to see the multiple subscriptions. And if you're like the three of us, you've probably got a lot of resources and it gets a little bit unwieldy. So you just have a way to easily uncheck, you know, data centers or subscriptions. That really just filters out the experience and lets you focus on what you care about. So just definitely something to check out. Other things, we've added a lot of really cool things to things like Server Explorer. That's our connected tooling. This gentleman right here and his team added HD Insight, so we're really excited about that. Websites has some cool enhancements, so I won't steal their thunder. Other things like storage, we have hierarchical tooling in there now for blobs, tables, queues. So just really cool stuff to check out. I'd say really the emphasis is it's on dev test. So just anything that makes your life better with testability, dev test, that's what we did there. Other parts of Laparound, so you know, if we want to start constructing an application, we go to File New, we're going to see a couple new things here. So under web, all of the web applications are now cloud enabled with cloud with Application Insights, which is about monitoring and usage. And also will help you create a dev test environment. I'll show you that in just a second. Also, if I go to the cloud node, we're going to echo the same thing. So we're going to see ASP.NET applications, but we see new things, web jobs, which Brady will go into, cloud services. That's our like highly scalable, highly available PaaS. And even we have these new cloud deployment projects, which lets you do more sophisticated config as code kinds of things, where you can define a topology, you can define a number of things. I'll show that too.
Okay.
So that's just kind of a quick tour. So let's go ahead and we'll create a ASP.NET application. We could add App Insights by default if we want to. And then, you know, this is just business as usual. So we can create, you know, web applications, MVC, web API. So let's create an MVC.
And you can already publish to Azure. There's a little checkbox
there. Yeah, so that's a really great question. So one thing we kind of figured out is, hey, if you're using Azure, the easiest thing to do should be, you know, to create projects that work in it, that dev test against it, that are all ready to go and publish. So you're going to see that optimization everywhere. So you'll see that, you know, by default, we check host in the cloud. That just means we'll provision either a website or a whole virtual machine. It's just ready for you to dev test. And when you're done, you can shut it down, deactivate. You're not going to pay for it anymore.
So this creates the VM entirely. If there's nothing there, we'll get out of this with a VM, with a web server, with a site running it.
Exactly. Just for the sake of time, I'll do website. It's a little bit faster for this. You know, in VM, you're spinning up a whole virtual machine, so it takes about 5 minutes, which is still good for what it's doing. Right. So we can create a new web application. I'm going to pick the subscription that it goes in. I'm going to pick a data center that's close to me and hit OK. That's provisioning that dev test environment.
Okay.
And what we can do is, just for the sake of time, I'll probably fast forward a little bit. Well, we'll race it here. So I have one that's ready to go.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
So, all right, so what do we have by default? So we have the standard web application, right? Okay. And we have a getting started surface that helps us with that. Something new that we're seeing this config as code kind of project and solution folders, right? So we get a battle-hardened PowerShell script Yeah. And you're seeing actually in Visual Studio we get colorization. That's something that's kind of new and cool. Right, and we just understand that, you know, most developers are looking at CI today. So we're giving you that starting point script. And it's actually a really good script against VMs and websites. Also, we understand that people work in a life cycle, right? Yeah. So we're going to put all of the different parameters and properties in a config file, and we name it -dev. And that sets you up for a pattern where you could have, you know, .test, staging, prod if you want to. More than likely, prod, you're going to have someone else or a more secure kind of user put in some secrets.
So everything that changes from dev, test, all the configuration settings, you put in one place and you know where to go.
And we set you up for that. Another really cool thing I'll give the nod to is we have a dev test lab service in Visual Studio Online. And we also have a release management service. These artifacts and these assets are understood by that service and they travel really well into that service. Also, if you have a CI tool of choice, you can use these scripts and that tool as well. So you've got just tons of flexibility. As you mentioned, everything's ready to deploy, right? So I could go to publish, and you can see it's already pre-configured just to push it straight to Azure. That's it. So couldn't be easier there. Let's take a look at just constructing, you know, a little slightly more interesting service. So if I want to connect to other services, other building block services or microservices, what do I do? So let's go to add, connected service. This is something we've totally updated. So we have a set of providers, you could think of it that way. So well-known services in Azure, well-known ones in Office and in Microsoft. And we even have opened this up so third parties can plug in. So we're seeing Salesforce. But it just makes it really easy to pick a particular service. The tool's going to look into your subscription and into your account. And it's going to find all the resources. And you can see it finds it in all my accounts, all my subscriptions, right? And I can find, oh, hey, here's the storage account I want to use. It's in the right data center. We'll go ahead and add it. When we're doing that, this does the work that you would have done yourself. So it's getting the NuGet packages, you know, the brand new NuGet packages. It's laying down config files so that we can follow that same config as code pattern.
Right.
Right, where the lifecycle config is in one place and you know where to change it as you move between configs. Another simple but kind of nice thing is that we pop up this getting started page, which is just on the web, and we're going to keep it up to date. But that's going to give you just the drop-in snippets so that you can do all the most common next steps, right? So here we're showing initializing from the connection string, creating a container, working with queues, all that kind of stuff. So it just really accelerates the process of working with a service.
What's great about it is it also does server-side settings on Azure as well. So if you add Office 365, for example, there are permissions that need to be set on the cloud.
Totally.
So Visual Studio does that for you. Don't have to
like
go.
Sounds like you've tried this
right?
before.
Yeah, a few times.
Yeah, it's a few steps of the portal that we're trying to avoid for you, right?
Right.
So just making that config better. And when you're doing dev test, right, it's you just want to get going. And you don't want to spend a bunch of time configuring. Here's another example of that. So probably kind of the highest achievement, like if we had Visual Studio achievements, maybe would be you've set up Active Directory with your application. So we wanted to make that easy.
Okay.
So you can just go ahead and right-click on your project now. You can say configure AD auth.
Nice.
And this is working with Azure AD. So,
right.
Right. And in this case, it's just as simple as typing in the domain.
Right.
And we hope to even make this simpler in the future, where we just glean what your domain is, right? But if it's something like Azure test.onmicrosoft.com, and simply hit finish, and we're going to do the same wire up. We're going to register this application to. As an application in the AD.
And
we're going to do that kind of configuration. We're going to set the callback URL.
Creates the client ID, brings it back. There's the advanced settings as well. If you know the client ID and you just want to type it in.
Right. I have to admit, on this machine, I probably haven't logged into the portal. So we're just going to get this going. I might come back to it and just surprise you and wire up AD.
Okay.
Because it's kind of fun.
No problem. We have a question from Bill Walter. Is it possible and practical for a small business to set up Windows 2012 Essential Server on Azure IS and turn off all on-premises services and run their business from Azure, including computer and user authentication, so move everything to Azure remote users around the country? Is that a viable?
Yeah, so I won't speak to Essential Server, but we definitely know customers who have been able to move just really
100%.
100% of their infrastructure. And you know, there's a bit of a curve if you're starting from on-prem and the way you like things configured. Yeah. You're going to spend some time configuring, but you're going to find
that. Yeah, I guess the answer is not an all or nothing thing. You can go all the way to 100%, right? But it doesn't have to be.
Other thoughts?
Right?
Yeah. I would agree with that. And if you also factor in things like real estate, electrical costs, having to ship stuff between data center and data center, now you've only got one Azure bill.
Yeah.
So you know, don't just think about taking care of your server. Think about all the other junk that goes along with that. I saw an interesting statistic probably 2 years ago. Something like 72% of all the money spent in the UK and the US in, I believe, 2011, 2012, 72% was spent on maintaining servers.
Right.
So if you think about taking that 72% of what you spend your money on for IT and funneling it back into innovation and development, you can probably do some damage.
So, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's another question. This one, I'll leave it for later. That's for Lance. So we're talking about Storm and Hadoop Insights. When we get to that topic, we revisit
it.
Yeah,
we'll have the expert talk about that one.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Actually,
so
the third one.
One more.
We can probably take.
Okay. So, can we deploy our web application directly to a container, same as we do it for a VM?
Yes, you could deploy to websites or a VM because it's really just web deploy on the deployment end.
Yeah.
As long as you can hit that endpoint, you should be okay.
And the experience is very similar. I can go to Server Explorer, enable debugging. Mm-hmm. Right. The things you can do don't change that much.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly right. Yep. It's just if you're pushing it to Azure websites, it tends to be. There's kind of a smaller number of steps. You don't have to put the extension on the VM. Nothing against VMs, but if you just need to have a website running.
If you saw Jay Schmelzer's demo yesterday, he basically did kind of the whole soup to nuts of deploying to a container in Docker Hub. So
that's cool.
That's kind of directionally where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Do you want to
show? Can you combine Azure AD with SocialAuth? You can. I don't know exactly what you're trying to do with that, so I don't know if there's some specific issue you're thinking about, but you can combine auth styles.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay, cool. So so we showed building a set of apps. I want to switch gears into what does it look like to kind of troubleshoot and diagnose an app. So what I have here, this is a cloud service. It's like a guestbook application. There's a web front end. There's a worker in the back. There's some shared business logic. It's a kind of a queue-based app where it's sending messages. And we can actually F5 it just to check it out. So, you know, this is a simple but kind of canonical kind of application that we find ourselves in the inner loop troubleshooting, and then when it goes live to the cloud, we might troubleshoot some more. So we have, you know, some of our friends here on the guestbook.
I know that guy.
Yeah, I've seen him before. All right. So let's think about some of the troubleshooting experiences we have. So if you go into Server Explorer, which is, again, where we said you can kind of go for dev test tasks, we'll expand cloud services. That's the container that we deploy this into. And in a second, we're going to see a set of the resources. And what you can just simply do is you can right-click on any of the servers, and you can get all the trace information and diagnostics information. You can also attach even a live remote debugger.
Okay.
Probably don't want to do that for production, but great for dev test.
Yep.
Right? So let's take this guestbook instance I have here. You can kind of drill down. And so we're seeing a few things. One I'd just point out is now, even if you haven't deployed with diagnostics turned on, you can just enable it anytime. So this is kind of an agent-based operation now, and you can just add that agent anytime, and the tools will automatically do it. You can also reconfigure diagnostics at any time. So we, you know, by default, Visual Studio will go with an errors-only collection plan. You could crank that up to all information. You can make your own custom plan. Mm-hmm. And that works across a number of different log sources, like app logs, event logs, perf counters. And so, you know, long story short, we'll get your errors wherever they are being collected. And that's actually transferred into storage, and the tools can.
So you're actually saying that you can change those settings without having to redeploy the entire app. Is
exactly
that the case?
What I'm
because
saying.
That used to be a huge pain, right?
If you total pain.
Right.
And this works on cloud services. It works on virtual machines. It works really across the whole suite. So I'm pretty excited about that. Also, you know, if you want to get even more information and more kind of useful ways to search across your logs. Like today, there's a lot of different strings, and you're searching across a bunch of strings. And that gets tricky. Well, this guy, again, can help us with that. But We have this thing called semantic logging using Event Source and ETW, and that's just kind of the next level of semantic logging that you can add on top. So here we've defined an event source in our solution.
Yep.
We can go ahead and pick that, and then the same diagnostics and trace infrastructure will start sucking in that additional ETW trace. Let me give you an example of what that can do. So if I went to the business logic tier that we have here, and we defined this event source, it's really simple code. You can start to see these kind of logical things that happen in the app, right? So when I'm queue processing, I can see when I'm about to process a blob. I can see when the worker role started. I can see when the processing is actually happening. I can see when that was successful and actually generated a thumbnail.
Yeah.
Right? So it gives me more logical kind of events
right.
that are happening in my app. And then all I need to do is just emit a trace statement saying, here's the event that's happening as I'm going through my app, and I can really correlate now all, you know, across a task, I can correlate that across all the components of my service.
Right.
And now when I'm searching, it's so much easier to stitch that info back together with actual properties instead of mucking through strings to do that. So, we think that'll help folks quite a bit. Suggest you check it out. Now, how do you kind of go work with it? Well, you just say view diagnostics data. This is just a nice view over table storage. You can use any tool you want to look at table storage.
It's great that you're doing all these things and you didn't leave Visual Studio at any point. That's really great about it, right?
Yeah, good. That's one of the things we're aiming to do. It's fine if you want to leave, but you shouldn't have to for the you know the common tasks. So here, we're in the summary, we're just going to pop things that have happened in the last 15 minutes. You can kind of reconfigure how far you want to look.
Okay.
And you know we'll pop things like, hey, here's the event that happened. We've been generating thumbnails. And because we're using that semantic logging, I can even see the parameters that are being passed in.
Right.
And that's just helpful to really stitch together things again. And then I can click View All Data, and this is going to bring up our storage kind of table editor and table viewer, where you can see the actual query. It's OData, so you know, dust off your OData knowledge. But even if you don't, if you're not an aficionado with that, we have a query builder, which is just a much easier way to query across. And then you can stitch together by time slice or by property or by event ID, and much more easily find issues and find patterns and what caused an issue.
So you're showing lots of tools inside Visual Studio. What if I'm not a Microsoft guy, I'm a Python developer, why should I care? How does Azure help me at all?
Yeah, well, I mean, we do have tools, very good tools, very similar tools for Python already that actually work in Visual Studio.
Okay.
So you can use these same kind of diagnostics tooling in concert with that.
All right.
And also, this data that we've been collecting is in storage, so you could use a number of different tools against the same data, right? So we can, if you wanted just kind of one IDE to win them all, of course, you'll use VS, and you can do it that way, or you could use a bunch of tools.
I guess everything Visual Studio is doing with Azure, there are web services available that if you want to write any other language, anything, and just talk to these web services, you can always do that, right?
Yep.
And we also have two different CLIs, so you could use the PowerShell or the XSplit CLI if you're not on Windows.
Great.
So you have all that.
Great.
Definitely.
I think we are kind of, we need to move on because we...
We need to move on? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do that. So I want to show you one more thing.
Sure.
If I
go
get permission for
it.
For that.
Definitely.
It's real quick. And Brady would be upset if I didn't show this. So we don't want Brady to be upset. So...
get upset.
You don't get upset. Yeah, you're right.
I get even.
Good to go first. That's all I got to say. All right. So, looking at this same solution, you know, here's a little bit more of the business logic. And one thing I want to show is that to even prevent issues before they started, we added some new frameworks and tools that are going to help you with this. So we call this Azure Code Analysis.
Okay.
It's like any code analysis, but it's a little bit more special for the kinds of issues that our customers and our support teams. And our advisory teams have been finding, and
right.
we elevate those and kind of help you before you get into a pickle, kind of elevate some of these issues. So here's one where you're using stored shared access signatures and expiry time. I'm sure you knew off the top of your head that you know using something that's under 5 minutes is going to be problematic, right?
Yep.
We all knew that, right?
Yeah.
But even if you forget, these tools are going to help you. You can just hover over the green squiggle. We're actually using Roslyn for this.
Oh, look at that.
And we just give you actionable info. Hey, this needs to be more than 5 minutes. You can fix this in real time, or you can run it through your build system in the build system will run the code analysis.
That's great. So that comes from learnings that we know people who are not used to the cloud. Those are the common things that the fallbacks that so already prevent that. That's great.
And when we're feeling really confident that we can actually make the change for you, we will.
Right.
So here's another case. I'm setting the start time to now. That's going to be problematic. Matching up what now means is all relative.
Offset.
Might not be a good practice, but here, I think my machine has the live demo jitters, but okay, here we go. So we're seeing that, hey, the guidance is to avoid setting this, and if you want, we can just go ahead, if you like the preview, we can just go ahead and do it for you. Right?
Sweet.
And so we'll fix
Look
it
at that. So yeah,
great.
Easy to see, and
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Great.
Well, I think that's a good tour. I want to leave time for these guys to be able to go deeper. So
great. Yeah, I see some questions coming. I'll just give time. So one of the questions is on web jobs. So I'll let Brady start and talk about what web jobs are, why we care, and then we go to the questions.
I can do that. So I can go ahead and talk about what web jobs are. Basically, the idea behind a web job. Am I in your VM? Yes, I am. The idea behind a web job is that it provides a way for you to have background functionality running behind your website. So my buddy Pranav has a great example. He says, let's say you want to upload an image using a website, and then you want to optimize that image, shrink it, watermark it, whatever you want to do with it. That's not going to be conducive to running inside of an HTTP request, because it could take a little while. Or you might want to batch it and do 20 or 30 at a time. So that's when you'd want to use a web job, to basically add that background functionality. One of the other things that we've tried to do with web jobs, pardon my voice, is make it a lot easier for ASP.NET developers to be able to party on things like Azure Storage. One thing that I used to have to do a lot was basically to pump messages through an Azure Storage queue and then have some sort of a console exe that would be listening for those messages. We've made that really, really easy with web jobs. We have a web jobs question. While I go ahead and get my project started, I want to try and answer it.
Okay.
Let me see here. Is there a way to use a web job exactly as a worker role startup task to do something like setting an application before launching an ASP.NET 5 web role application as an Azure cloud service? No, there's not. That's you're kind of mixing conversations here. So no, it's not for that. It actually lives inside of a website. It doesn't live inside the HTTP context of the website. It's separate. It's a separate process. But you, no, that's not what it's for. It's definitely not going to be something that's useful in cloud services.
So web jobs is called web jobs for a reason, right?
Right.
Leaves us with the website, right? And it's supposed to be related in terms of context with whatever the website is doing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, when you want to do things at the system level, that's when cloud service might make sense.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to create some basic site. And I'm not really used to this keyboard. So I'm just going to say some site.
At least it's a click one.
It is. I like that. Yeah. So some site. I'm going to go ahead and click OK. The next thing I'm going to do, I'm just going to make this an empty site real quickly. And I want to go ahead and click the host in the cloud checkbox. And I want to click OK right here. And I'm already logged into my Azure account, so I'm good to go. I'll leave that as some site 9887. I want to push this into West US. And I'll go ahead and click OK. And I'm going to actually put this into my my Azure MSDN account.
It's cool. We're doing all these deployments on the fly here, live, or trusting that things just happened. I love that. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm actually just creating a local web application project right here. I'm going to go over here to my server at my Solution Explorer. And what you'll see, and this is some tooling that we actually had available in Update 3 in SDK 2.4, but I'm going to show you some of the stuff that we've built on top of that. I actually just wrote a blog post on the ASP.NET framework and tools blog the other day. I could pull that up later if you want to see it. But if you just do a quick search for ASP.NET Framework and Tools blog, you should land on it pretty easy.
All right.
So I'm going to go ahead right here, and I want to right-click my WAP, my web application project. And I'm going to go right here to Add. And what you'll see is that we have new Azure Web Job project.
Right.
And we also have existing project as Azure Web Job. I'm really going to go down the new path here. But just to tell you what the existing one is, I could actually select an existing console application and just pull that guy in. And then I could actually deploy that console application up to the cloud as a web job.
An actual Visual Studio Console application, XE, right?
That's really all it is.
Right.
That's really all it is. So what I'll do right here is I'll say new Azure Web Job project. And I'm going to call this guy Continuous Job. Maybe. Continuous job. So this guy's going to be continuous. I'm going to go ahead and leave it as run continuous. I'm going to click OK. And what's going to happen is we're going to pull in a NuGet that we use within Studio just for publishing out web jobs. Why do we put that as a NuGet? Because if the API changes and we need to change the way we do deployments rapidly, we wanted to be able to push that out to you rapidly without having to wait for another VS release. Right. So we've actually packaged up all the publishing stuff that we're doing as a NuGet. Okay. So we can ship that a lot faster. So what you'll see here is that I've actually created an additional project right here, continuous job. And what you'll see that I've got code in this continuous job to basically block it. So this guy will start up and he'll just hang out in memory and keep running. And over here, we have this attribute called queue trigger. And that's actually looking at a storage queue or a Azure storage account queue called queue. Really creative, okay? The idea behind this is whenever a message lands in that queue, this method is going to wake up, process that message, do whatever I need to do, and I don't have to worry about all the storage code that I would need to write to actually make it work.
Okay, so I don't have to keep pulling the storage, right? The thing we just know.
Correct. Right. And speaking of polling, one thing that I do want to do here to make this demo go a little bit quickly is to new up an instance of a config object, and this will be a new job host config. Not used to the keyboards. There we go. Had interesting computer problems today. There we go. Job host config. And thank you for helping me troubleshoot those problems out
no
in the
problem.
Hallway earlier. So I'm going to do config, and I'm going to say queues dot, and I'm going to say max polling interval. And I'm actually going to set this to time span dot from seconds to. I'm going to pass it in two here. Because I want this demo to go really quickly. We're going to do something here in a second that'll be a lot of fun. It'll make a little bit more sense.
So you're configuring how often you want this to
create. What I'm basically telling it is the maximum I want you to wait before rechecking the queue is 2 seconds. So we're going to be checking really fast.
Right.
If you don't need that kind of processing power, you know, don't set it higher, whatever you want.
So that's sharing the same resources as the website. So the thing to be careful here is like if you use 100% of the CPU, your website will suffer with that, or is that not the case?
That's not really the case.
No?
I haven't seen that actually happen. And when I've talked to the guys on the server side, on the server side team, they say that they've got process isolation there.
Oh, really?
And then you can also fan that site out. So you could always create a multi-instance site out of it, and then your web job will be running on multiple instances.
Okay.
So
All right.
Could do that as well. So I've already created one continuous job here. And what I want to do now is just add another new Azure Web Job project. And I want to call this guy on-demand job. And I'm going to set this guy up as on-demand. Now, if I wanted to set it as a schedule, I could actually go right here and set it up as a recurring job and, you know, set my time, specify if I want minutes, hours, days, weeks, whatever, in terms of my interval. I'm not going to do that today. I'm just going to do an on-demand job. I'm going to click OK. And the reason that I want to do an on-demand job is I want to show you that we really have two sets of templates. All this stuff in the web job projects, it's really just a console application template, but we're referencing the web jobs SDK.
Right.
I would highly recommend that you do a little bit of searching, look at some of the other Channel 9 shows we've had
right.
on the web jobs SDK, because that's really where the meat and potatoes is of this. I'm just making it easy for you to deploy it.
We only have so much time now. So.
Right. So I'm not going to do too much on that. And you'll see that this function is kind of a different, this is really a manual function. And what you'll see for this SDK is that I've actually got a separate attribute here. Before you saw me using Qtrigger, and now you're saying that I'm using queue. The idea behind this is when this manual trigger runs, it's going to drop a message into that queue.
Okay.
So queue, I'm going to have a message dropped onto the queue. Queue trigger, I'm going to be reading messages off
right.
of the queue.
Read and write. Yeah.
Right. So that's pretty easy. And I'm going to go ahead and close this guy down. I'm going to check my phone just to see how I'm doing on time. Doing good.
Yep.
All right. Now what I'm going to do is really quickly, I'm going to right-click my site, and I'm going to go ahead right here and say publish. And what you'll see is that the typical website publishing dialog is going to open up. I'm going to do something kind of interesting. On this tab, I'm going to select a bug. And the reason why, we'll get to in a second with the latter part of the demo, I'm going to go ahead and click Start Preview right here. And what you'll see is that it's going to go ahead, it's going to do a compilation. It's going to do its traditional diff where it figures out how to, you know, which files it has
What's
to push
in there,
up.
What do you have?
Exactly. Thank you, Syed, for that, the guy that was just on. But what you'll see now is that we're actually pushing stuff up into app data jobs, continuous job. And if I were to scroll down, you'll see we're pushing up into on-demand job.
Okay.
That's because the exes for web jobs actually live in the site root underneath the app data folder so that you can't execute them. You can only execute them through a REST API call.
Right.
So that's how that works. All right, now I'll do publish. And what's going to happen is it's going to publish up that whole website and those web jobs all in one fell swoop. why that's happening, I'm going to go over here to, and I do this the old-fashioned way. Mm. I use the storage node.
Okay.
So I'm going to go over here to my storage node, and my site's already deployed. So I've got a guy right here called Brady Storage. I want to right-click this and say Properties, and yep. I'm going to copy out my connection string.
That's handy.
Okay. Yeah.
Copy out my connection string right here.
That's a good trick.
Super handy.
Yeah.
And you've been saying something throughout these presentations that really drives this point home.
Yeah.
We're not leaving VS to do any of this.
Right. That's
We're configuring
great, right?
everything
yeah.
right here. And the idea behind web jobs is that since they use storage, they actually have to have a storage account to run if you're using the web jobs SDK.
Right.
And we have this awesome thing called the web jobs dashboard. And what we've done is we've added server explorer nodes underneath each website so that now you can see the web jobs that are underneath each website as a web job node in server explorer. And I can right click those guys. And if they're on demand jobs, I can right click them and I can run them.
Right. So there's the, so you so can actually that. Tell which jobs yeah. are, that's awesome.
So we've actually grouped it so that you can tell right. what's what. And I could right-click this guy, and I could say View Dashboard, and that's going to go right out to the dashboard. I could refresh its status, or I could run
right.
it. But what I want to do first is go over here to View Settings, which will open up the actual website settings. And I need to set up two different connection strings. Again, this is all extensively blogged. Azure Web Jobs, Jobs Dashboard.
Yep.
Oh, shoot. I want to go right here, and this will be a lot easier with the new tooling. As if it's pretty easy to begin with the new Ad Connected Service Christian. Tooling, it's going to
yeah.
be so much better.
Yep.
Web, jobs.
Oh. We can just keep adding those whenever we get a chance, right?
I love that.
Yep.
We actually wanted to party on that dialogue for this release, but we couldn't get in sync in time.
Yeah.
But it would have been fantastic if we just had that in here. So I'm going to save this, and that's going to push those settings out to that website.
Right. You just updated the config settings, so yep. the web jobs can reach out to the storage. And
exactly.
Right.
Now I'm going to do a restart right here. And what I'm going to do next is I'm going to go over here to my continuous job. I'm going to open up this functions guy, and I'm going to put a breakpoint right here.
Okay.
Why am I going to put a breakpoint in a console application that's going to be running in the cloud? Because one of the other cool features that we've done is we've given you the ability to start a job.
Because red to yellow to green is awesome.
Yep. Yeah. And once it's actually okay. started, this has taken a second in the new preview for some reason, past couple days.
And still
doing it. Refresh it. There we go.
Yep.
Now I can right click this guy and look at that.
Attach the bugger.
Attach the bugger. So I'm going to click that, and that's actually going to go out and make an attachment to the remote debugger that's running up in websites, just like we did a couple releases ago with being able to remote debug an Azure website. We're working with the same people. Thank you for all your help. We're the same technology. We're just reaching out, making a connection to that remote debugger.
All the compute containers have the attached debugger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty
and
fantastic.
Of course, you can only do this because you have the right privileges, permissions, so it's not just like it's open there.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Maybe we should take two quick deploy questions.
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead.
They've been sitting there.
So there's a question. How can we industrialize and implement development UAT production from a Visual Studio build as we do today on premises?
Sure. I'll grab this one. So. So you saw the starting point where we put in a script, and the script kind of gives you that, here's how I push this particular application. One thing you can do that's very straightforward from that is you can just have the multiple MS deploy endpoints and push to each one. You could blast them all at once. You could sequence them. A more kind of industrial strength, to use that word, thing that I would do is look at the release management features we have in Visual Studio Online.
Okay.
And look at actually orchestrating that pipeline. And that works in concert with a new technology in Azure called Azure Resource Manager.
Yep.
And Azure Resource Manager lets you stand up multiple instances, multiple websites,
yep.
and you can kind of define that topology that you want to deploy. So I would definitely check those things out.
So there are several different technologies that are related to managing environments. It really depends on how big and how industrialized your solution is. It can go all the way from just deployments, lots of websites, all the way to really
right.
an end-to-end solution. Mm-hmm.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, we showed the simple one here, but absolutely, everything is going to be matured and industrialized that.
Right.
Developers are asking.
And what you'll see here is that what I've just done inside of this Server Explorer widget was actually went over here and I right-click this on-demand job. Remember what the on-demand job is? He drops messages into the queue. I clicked run. As soon as it ran, the debugger lit up, and you'll see that I've got a live debugging session right now, debugging against this continuous job running up in Azure. And if I were to move the mouse over that, you'll see there it is. And
awesome.
If I were to hit F5 here, just to show you that there's no smoke and mirrors, if I were to actually refresh this queue and go over here, if I could click this guy and say, this is a live test, and click OK, that message is going to go into the queue. And look here. This is a live test. So you'll see that we're actually debugging that web job right up in the cloud.
Brilliant. So, awesome. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for
having me. I'm concerned about time, so I want Lance to have enough time to talk about HD Insights.
No problem.
You bet.
Lance, I want to save time, so what can you tell us about HD Insights?
Great. So HD Insight is our service in the cloud for running Hadoop.
Right.
It's for big data processing. And what we do is we actually run Hortonworks distribution, the HDP distribution of Hadoop in Azure. We actually run it just like it is out of the box. So any application that runs on Hadoop, on Apache Hadoop, will run in HD Insight.
So it's not a Microsoft flavor, it's not proprietary, we use the same thing, right?
We use the same thing. There are times where we make changes. When we make those changes, we actually contribute them back to Hadoop. And so it's not our own fork of Hadoop. And we do that because we want all of the code that is built out in the community on top of Hadoop to be able to work in our service.
Okay, and what kind of scenario, so what should the developer consider, like, oh, hang on, that's a HD Insight solution, should I use it?
Yeah, so we see customers doing really interesting things with HD Insight today. One example is we have a customer who has thermostats in homes, and they're smart thermostats, and they actually, whenever the thermostat turns on or off, they log that into HD Insight into their account. And they also compare that to the temperature of the home outside for that particular address. And then they calculate an efficiency variable for how effective that house is at keeping the home warm or cold, depending on the case. And then they contact those people and let them know if they can sell them windows or insulation or changes to their roof that actually can make their house more effective in terms of how it manages the heat.
Interesting.
And so it's really, a lot of people use it to gain deep insight into their customers. They can let them add more value to their customers, and they use it to understand patterns in their data that you couldn't understand without looking at larger amounts of data.
And I know a lot of people who do Hadoop on premises, and so why should they bother using the cloud? They already have a bunch of service configured and like
So there are. I mean, there are a number of cases that we're seeing for why we're seeing customers use Hadoop in the cloud. One is simply, these big data workloads require a lot of capital expense if you are trying to run them on-prem, and you have to be managing the hard drives and the entire data center all the time. We can, in minutes, we can spin up a 100-node cluster or a multi-100-node cluster in 15 minutes, and we can have that. Yes, and soon as you're done, we'll spin it down, and you only pay for the usage of the cluster.
Right.
So it is a fraction of the cost of running, building that data center out in terms of what we see people doing with it in the cloud. There are other cases like the sensor case I mentioned with the thermostats, where you have a distributed data problem to start with, and so to be able to collect the data from all the areas where the data is being generated, it's actually nice to have a cloud infrastructure that's already in place that can reliably gather that data and process it instead of having to implement that all yourself.
Okay, well, I think one of the values of cloud that people don't usually talk about is this abstraction of all the plumbing, right? You don't have to go there and configure a bunch of VMs, install the software, configure a network. Mm-hmm. You just say, I want Hadoop, just give me whatever nodes I need and you're good.
Right? Yeah, that's a great point. There's a lot of work involved in deploying and running Hadoop reliably. And though we don't change the core of Hadoop without checking it back in, one thing we do is around Hadoop, we actually instrument the services themselves. And so we guarantee that the services will keep running. And we ensure reliability and availability of those services. In addition to deployment, we also manage the services for you. So if you ever had a problem with one of the many animals in the Hadoop farm, as I like to call them, we actually maintain their health and ensure that they're running well. And if there's ever a problem, we will track that. We will track that issue, and we'll fix it.
Right.
And we'll work with our partners with Hortonworks to fix it. And even if we have to change the core of Hadoop. We'll make those changes and check them back in.
Great. And we have a few questions that have been sitting there since the beginning.
Yeah.
Do we have an implementation of Mahout for Hadoop Insight?
Yeah, so you can, absolutely. It's actually, it's not our own implementation, it's Mahout. So you can run Mahout, kind of to what we were saying before, you can run Mahout in Hadoop Insight. In fact, today, we announced a feature that's now available called Cluster Customization, which lets you run any Hadoop ecosystem component in Hadoop Insight. We also have a blog going out today that will teach you how to run Spark in Hadoop Insight, so you can run any component there.
Oh, okay. So if it's not out of the box, or you have an open source component that I think it would add, so I just go there and...
You can go there and use the cluster customization feature to run that on your Hadoop
That's
cluster.
That's brilliant. That's cool. And there is another question about support for Storm in Hadoop Insight.
Yes. So I'll actually switch over to the screen here for a minute and just show you today. If you go into Hadoop, you can see that we've got Storm cluster available. Nice. So you can actually dynamically deploy your own Storm cluster today for Hadoop. It's in preview, but we launched it, I think, a couple weeks ago. And we've run it, these are incredibly scalable deployments. We've run it with Event Hub, so it comes, we've pre-configured it with a spout that connects it to Event Hub. And we've run clusters that process over 1 million events per second coming through Storm.
Yeah, that sounds great. Anything you can show us? Like, we still have, 4 minutes?
Great, yeah. Yeah, there's one more question I'll hit really quick, which is, can we do fast ad hoc queries against Hadoop Insight?
I think you just answered that question.
Yeah, well, with Storm, you certainly can. Storm is more of a real-time streaming technology. Another one that we've got in Hadoop Insight is HBase. And we also deployed a project called Phoenix, which gives you query, SQL-like query over an HBase table. And we can do, we've got a demonstration we've done of 100 billion rows query running 2 seconds cold and 250 milliseconds fast.
I think we can call that fast.
So it's pretty cool technology. So one thing we haven't had, though, is Visual Studio. And that's the thing I wanted to switch over and show you here today, is we've been working to make it so that you can develop with big data right inside of VS. And so what I've got here is now inside of my Server Explorer, you'll see an Hadoop Insight cluster connection. And if you have any clusters, if you're logged in, we'll go out and check out those clusters. We'll find them, and you'll see I have Lancel Query Console as the name of my cluster. We'll explore that and display the Hive databases that you've got, and you can see the tables. So we'll show you the schema for those tables, so it'll look a lot just like a SQL database. We'll also show you the storage accounts that you have associated with that. You can right-click on the tables and view the top rows. So I've done that for this billing table, so I can see the actual data that's sitting. In this case, I have a CSV file that's sitting in my HDFS file system, on top of blob storage. And I just right-clicked and said view, and it runs a job down here. I pre-ran it because it takes a few seconds to run this one. And then you can actually see the data. And then the other thing we've got is the ability to actually edit Hive HQL. So this is an HQL query that I've got, and you can see it's not full IntelliSense at this stage. We've just got syntax highlighting. We're working on IntelliSense, and that will be coming. And I can actually go in and submit those jobs directly. So if I say submit here, I'm actually queuing up that job, and you'll see that there's a job status field that I can use over to the side to track the execution of the jobs. I can also, when it's done, I can view the output. I can look at the state of the queries that ran.
Right. So you're doing pretty much everything from Visual Studio. Just wrote
query,
submit it, you're getting the results.
That's right.
Nice.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so we're very excited to be able to bring that Visual Studio experience to our developers. And of course, we support all of the open source and other party development experiences that you can have against Hadoop. But we felt like this was one that we wanted to make it so, keeping in the theme of what we've been talking about today, make it so that right inside of VS you can do big data development as well.
Nice, nice. We have kind of an unrelated question. Someone asked if we will ever have Azure accounts free and versions for students. And I think we didn't talk much about MSDN, for example, and the benefits. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, that's a good one. Yeah, I think we were both running off of MSDN subscriptions. Yeah. You can get up to, let's say, $150 US in credits. It's just yours to use for anything. So that's something I would check out. Also, you can get MSDN through different programs. So there's like the DreamSpark program I might check out as a student.
Yeah. Right.
So there are, and if you're a startup company, we've got a Spark program for that as well. So I would definitely check those things out. MSDN gives you all the software you need and compute hours. I don't know if anyone caught it, but even the VM I'm running is actually the thing you can get today, actually in the Azure Gallery. It's actually a Visual Studio VM in the cloud with 2015 preview. So it's just...
I guess if you're
it's so easy to get started now, right?
If you're a developer shop of any kind, students, startups, like if you're not using MSDN, you're probably missing a lot of stuff, right? Azure is just, you get Azure subscriptions, you get Office 365 subscriptions, Developer Edition, right? You get documentation, you get software you can
There's
use.
There's the training that we talked about yesterday.
Training, right? Yeah. So I think definitely look for this because it should open a lot of doors.
Yeah, I ran for my first year on Azure for free through a BizSpark account. For a whole year. I didn't spend a dime.
So if you're hosting a blog, right? If you're hosting a WordPress site or whatever, like you can breathe.
And also remember, you get started for free no matter what. I mean, you can go ahead and create an account, provide a credit card. You can have a website running for free. You can have a lot of different things for free. You don't have to pay for most of the stuff. So, you know, you could get started for free.
Like 10 free websites, something like that.
Yeah, 10 free websites per region. So you have, like 7,000 now or something crazy.
Yeah, I guess the whole, so one of the things you can do with the subscriptions is set a spending limit, which happens with MSDN, so you never get a surprise, like you forget a VM running, and at the end of the month, oh my God, I have a bill to pay for it, so it will stop when you reach that limit.
Yeah, that's
so
actually the default. You have to lift the cap.
You have to remove
that. So it's kind of safe by default.
Yeah, so there's no surprises there. Mm-hmm. I think we're kind of wrapping up, so anything else, last message?
Definitely go get the bits that you saw today, go try it. Let us know what you think. Go get that VM if you want to go spin it up real easy.
Mm-hmm. This tooling looks fantastic.
Let us know how it goes. We're really excited. We're working a lot on this, so send us your feedback and looking forward to what we can do here.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.